Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Is bigger really better when it comes to the size of your RPG group? Does it matter whether you're playing in person or online? Is there a sweet spot for group size? Join me on the journey as I explore these questions. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 25 of Game Master's Journey. So glad that you joined me today, and I have another great episode for you today, and I'm going to step away from D&D a little bit and have a more general discussion about group size. So this topic was suggested to me by a listener, Nathan Lewis, so shout out to Nathan. Thanks for the idea for this topic. I think it's a great topic to talk about. So the question is there kind of a sweet spot for the size of your group, which is to say how many players you have at your table? Now, I remember when I first started gaming, playing D&D back in the early 90s when I was in high school, I thought bigger was better. And every time I put a game together, I got as many players as I could. And I think I usually had about six people at the table for most of the campaigns I ran in those days. And I remember not long after third edition came out, I started a campaign, and I wanted this campaign to be epic in every definition of the word, including the size of my group. And I started that campaign out. I had eight players. Now, the group quickly dwindled in size down to four. I think within a few sessions, I had gone from eight to four players. And, you know, at the time I just thought it was because, you know, people flaked out or whatever. But in hindsight now, I wonder if at least part of that wasn't or was because people were not having fun because I had too many players. So back then, I definitely thought that there was no such thing as too big of a group. The more of my friends I could cram into a room gaming together, the better. And, you know, from a kind of teenager's point of view of I want this to be a party, that definitely makes sense. But from a more kind of a game master point of view of I want to have the most fun I can have with this, and I want my players to have the most fun they can have, I think there definitely is a limit to how big your group can be before you start having less fun. So that's something I've learned in my 20 or so years of gaming and running games. So I thought I would kind of dig into this topic today, and I'd love to hear from you what you think about all this. So most games, or I think all games I've encountered, consider the average group size to be four. So for the sake of this discussion, I'm going to define a small group as four players or less, and a large group as more than four players. And by players, I'm not counting the GM. I think there's definitely a sweet spot when it comes to group size, and I don't think that that number is an absolute that you can apply across the board to all games and situations. That number is going to depend on the game that you're playing, whether you're playing in person or online, how well the players and the GM know one another, and the style of play of the GM and players. And there's also the social aspect to consider. So let's break all this down. So first of all, I think your optimal group size is going to depend on the game or the adventure that you're running. So there's a few factors here. First of all is party roles. Is the game that you're playing one where there are certain roles to be filled? So a great example of this is older incarnations of D&D, where you really wanted to have a fighter, rogue, wizard, and cleric in the party, or characters that are equivalent to that. Now, I would argue that this isn't as important in 5th edition, but I don't know. I think that's an argument we could have. I think probably people have differing opinions on whether you need the basic 4 and 5th edition or not. But anyway, in previous versions of D&D, you definitely did. Now, in these games, the minimum group size for success of the party is often determined by the adventure or the campaign itself. So for a game like D&D, you know, your minimum group size is probably going to be 4 because you need those 4 roles filled. But for example, you might have an adventure where there aren't any traps or locked doors that the players need to deal with. So maybe you don't need the rogue type character. So maybe you can get by with 3 players instead of 4. Another example of this is in the Fantasy Flight Star Wars games. If you're doing ship combat and your group has a starship that's not a one-man ship, a ship with a crew that they're using, like a YT-1300, you may have a minimum number of players that you need just to fill the roles that need to be filled on that ship in combat. So again, depending on the game you're playing, the game itself and or the adventure may dictate your minimum size because you may need certain roles filled. Another aspect of this is the difficulty of combat. So in a game or an adventure where there's a lot of combat, the party may need to have a certain number of characters just to have a good chance of success. Now, of course, as a GM, you can always scale the encounters themselves up or down to compensate for a smaller or larger group. But especially if you're running a published adventure, you may not want to do this. You know, part of the reason a lot of people run published adventures is to save work and prep time. And it's going to add a bit to your prep time if you have to modify every encounter for a larger or smaller group. And this can also sometimes have unforeseen consequences, especially depending on the game that you're running. So far with 5th edition D&D, the scaling of encounters has worked very well for me. I've had to scale encounters up, I've had to scale encounters down, and for the most part, things have worked how I anticipated that they would. D&D 3.5 and Pathfinder, I think it was a lot trickier, and I would sometimes have results that were unforeseen. And a game like Numenera, where there's really no encounter balancing to begin with, it's really difficult. So it's often easier to scale encounters up to accommodate a party that's larger than the size recommended by the adventure than it is to scale an encounter down to accommodate a smaller party. And this is simply because it's relatively easy to add a few monsters to an encounter. But if you have an encounter with only a few monsters involved, it can be difficult or even impossible to remove any of those and still maintain the integrity of the encounter. Right. Now, of course, you can try weakening the individual foes, but this can often have unpredictable results as well. So you can, if you start messing with individuals in the encounter and making them stronger or weaker, you can end up with an encounter that's either way too easy or way too hard. Now, a big part of this whole picture here is referred to as action economy, which is to say how many actions the party overall has in a round. So having more or less PCs than the recommended amount is going to vastly change the power level of the party because of the number of actions they have access to. And then other factors can exacerbate this even more. So for example, let's say you have a really large party, say 6 or more players, and all or most of those players are power gamers who are playing very min-max characters, right? So not only do you have a massive increase in the party power because you have so many players and so many actions, but you also have a further increase because each of those characters is maximized beyond what the adventure is assuming they will be. So these scenes can multiply and you end up with a mess. And this is exactly what happened with the 3rd edition campaign I referenced. Not only did I start out with a really large group, but also the characters were individually very powerful. And, you know, this was back in my power gaming days where I thought in order to have a game that my players would enjoy and had fun with, their characters had to be ridiculously powerful and I had to be giving out magic items left and right. And that would be a great topic for another day, because this is something I think, I don't know if every GM goes through this, but I see a lot of new GMs going through the same thing I did, where they're just handing out way too many and too powerful magic items and just things just go ridiculous really fast. And it almost seems like a a stage that every GM goes through. I don't know, maybe not everyone. Probably has to do with your age and maturity, because I feel like for me, definitely part of it was the teenage thing of like wanting to fit in and be accepted by the group. And, you know, obviously if I'm giving the players things they like, you know, they're going to like that. I think if I started GMing in my 30s, I might have been a little less prone to do that. But who knows? I mean, it's impossible to say, right? So another aspect of this is pacing or speed of play. So a big factor for me personally when I'm deciding what group size I want or what's too big is the speed of play. So every RPG I've played is turn-based, and with these kinds of games, the more players there are at the table, the longer each player has to wait to take her turn. The more players at the table, the longer each round of combat takes. And it's just, I mean, it's just simple mathematics, right? If you have four people at the table, four players, then, you know, you have to wait for three other players to take their turn before you get to take your turn. If you have six players, then you have to wait for five other players to take their turn before you get to take your turn. And so it's more time that you're sitting there waiting to be able to make your input. Now, some games just play faster than others, so this can be adjusted by the game that you're playing. So for example, Numenera has a very simple system, and combats can go fairly quickly compared to a game like Pathfinder. So I'm more comfortable with larger groups in a game like Numenera than I am in a game like Pathfinder. Playing or running a game with six or more players in Pathfinder or D&D 3.5 is a nightmare, and I would never ever want to run or play in a game like that again. I've been there on both sides of the table, and it's just simply not fun. You spend so much time just sitting there twiddling your thumbs waiting for a chance to do something, and combats just take forever. And it's really hard to keep a sense of danger and suspense or whatever in a combat that lasts for 2 hours or even an hour. All right, so I am going to take a short break from our discussion, and I have a new segment called The Book of the Week. And so every week I am going to tell you about a cool book that I really like that you can check out. And you can check these books out for free in Audible format from Audible Books. So today I'm recommending to you the book The Eye of the World by Robert Jordan. This is the first book in Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time series. This is hands down my favorite fantasy series that I have ever read. In fact, I've read the whole thing at least 3 or 4 times. Also, the entire series is out now. So unlike me, where I had to read a book and then wait a year for the next one to come out, you can read them all one after another, or better yet, you can have someone else read them to you on Audible Books. So there are dozens of awesome point of view characters in these stories, very well-developed characters, and the villains are also characters in their own right. They're interesting and believable. You know, they're not just, I'm evil and want to take over the world just because I'm evil. It's much better than that. It has a unique magic system that I really like, and also dozens of vivid and very realized and very different cultures. So this is an awesome source of inspiration if you're running any kind of a fantasy game, for inspiration for different cultures, what they might act like, what they might talk like, what they might dress like, a way to do magic a little differently. That's very cool. So definitely check out this book. And like I said, you can get a free trial of Audible Books from Game Master's Journey, and doing so helps us out greatly and helps us keep things going over here at the studio. So you can find out all the details for this in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney, and you can also find the link to the Audible trial, or you can also go to audibletrial.com/gamemaster. All right, so back to our discussion on group size. The next question is this game in person or online? And I think it actually does make a big difference as to what your optimal size is. So one reason for this is when you're playing online, it's a lot easier for players to get distracted between turns. They have the whole internet at their fingertips because they're on their computer already. and you, the GM, and the other players can't tell if they're paying attention or not, right? If you're sitting around a table and someone's on their laptop or their tablet or whatever surfing the internet, like, you can tell that they're not paying attention. However, online, you really have no way of knowing if they're paying attention or not. So you will often get to a player's turn in an online game, and not only has that player not decided what he's going to do ahead of time, he doesn't even know what's going on because he was reading a website somewhere or watching a YouTube video or something. So this really slows things down even more than it's already slowed down by having a large group, and it can get really frustrating for the GM and the other players when every turn you have to explain to the person what just happened that they weren't paying attention to. And again, this is even worse online because the larger your group, the longer each player has to wait to be able to do something, and the more likely they're going to go into another tab of their browser and get distracted by something. I mean, I've done it too as a player. You know, you're sitting there for 10 minutes waiting for a chance to do something, and it's like, well, I'm going to go over here and look at this, and then you kind of lose track of what's going on. Also, talking over each other is much, much more of a problem online. And with a big group, it can be almost impossible to do anything without an initiative order, just so that, you know, you can have some semblance of order to things. And even then, you will lose a lot of time to people talking over each other and having to repeat themselves. And again, this is just more of a problem online than it is in person, although it's still a problem in person and it's still an issue with larger groups. You know, the more people at the table, the more people are trying to talk at the same time, the more you're going to have to deal with this. But online, it's even harder because of the way that the voice communications work. A lot of times when people talk at the same time, the software just picks one person and you hear that person and you don't hear the other people. Where if you're in a room together, you can hear everybody talking at once. And sometimes you can even have a few people talking at the same time and it doesn't really slow things down because you hear what each of them is saying. But online, a lot of times it doesn't work like that. And it just happens more often because you can't read body language and it's harder to pay attention to people online. And so it just happens more often. And then you have the thing where everybody talks and then everybody stops and everybody waits for someone to talk and then they all talk again. And sometimes it'd be funny in a session to see how much time you lose to that. I have a feeling it would be shocking how much time you lose to that kind of stuff. It's also a lot easier online for a player to fall through the cracks. So if you have a shy or a polite player who isn't comfortable jumping in on top of people or interrupting people to get a word in, they may literally never get a chance to say anything if you have a large group of people and you don't notice. And as a GM, it's a lot easier to notice if this is happening if you're in a room with people, because again, you're just more aware of everybody and what's going on, and you can more likely notice that, oh, this one person isn't really getting their time in the limelight because maybe they're shy or they're introverted or they're just waiting for their turn and everybody else is just being crazy. And there might actually be a hard limit to the number of players you can have just due to whatever software you're using for your voice communications. So I know some people still use Skype. I'm not sure why. I can't stand Skype. But some people still use Skype, and Skype limits, you know, how many people you can have in a call. Google Hangouts, a lot of us use that for gaming. And I think the limit for a Hangout is like 10, which is, I mean, if you have 10 people at your table, things are getting out of hand already. You don't need more than 10 people. Roll 20, I'm not sure. I'm sure there is a limit. I'm not sure what it is on Roll 20. So this, unless you're using Skype, this probably isn't going to be an issue because that limit's going to be high enough. It won't matter, but it is there. So I think bigger groups are more manageable in person than online for all of these reasons. And I also think, in addition to limiting your maximum group size, I think being online also limits your minimum group size more than an in-person game does. And the reason for this is it's easier for a smaller group of people to interact and really get into things when they're in the same room and can read body language and stuff like that than it is when they're online. Also, I've found that when you're playing in person, people feel more compelled to fill lulls in the action or the conversation with role playing. Where online, it often seems when you have a lull like that, everybody's just sitting there waiting for someone else to do something, and it just drags on until you as a GM step in and make something happen. I think another factor that affects all this is how well does everyone know each other at the table. If you have a group that's made up of people where everybody's been friends for years and everybody knows each other really well, then you can probably handle a larger group than if you have a group of complete strangers. Things like people talking over each other and the game just turning into a zoo, I think is less of a problem when everyone knows each other really well, because there's this feeling of familiarity, you know how to communicate really well, and there's just more respect there. And because of that, there's also less of a problem with each player getting the amount of attention that they deserve with a larger group. And again, this is because the group knows already who the more introverted people are, and they'll tend to generally care that those people actually get their share of attention if they're all good friends. Where if you have, say, an online or in-person group where nobody really knows each other, and there's one person that's not really getting much attention, like, people may or may not give a shit, right? But if everybody's friends, then they know, oh, hey, you know, Steve is kind of shy, and we need to really be sure that Steve gets a chance to tell us what his character's doing. And you may even have players who really work to bring Steve into things. And I had a friend named Kurt that I used to role play with, and he was awesome about bringing people into the game, whether it was just a player who's maybe more shy, or maybe a player who's a new player and they're not sure what to do. Kurt was really good at role playing with that person and bringing them into discussions that the group was having, and just making sure that everybody was involved. And if you have someone at your table like that, then that's awesome, and that can kind of help you cope with having more people. I think in addition to larger groups working better with people who know each other well, I think smaller groups work better with people who know each other well too. They're better able to role play and have fun together with a smaller number of people than a complete group of strangers will. You know, you can have a group of two players if you're all really good friends and make it work, where that can be really rough when nobody knows each other. So another part of this is, what are the GM and the player styles? And this really just comes down to personality types of the people involved. There are some types of players and GMs that have personalities that just won't work well with either a large or a small group. Some people are very extroverted and they'll tend to hog the attention if you let them. They'll talk over people, or they'll just never stop talking themselves and never give anyone else a chance to say anything. So, you know, this type of person is even more of a problem online than in person, because it's harder to cut them off. You know, with some of the voice comm technology out there, you literally can't cut them off, because if you try, no one will hear you, because it's giving precedence to the person already talking and it's not letting anyone else break in. This is another reason I really like Google Hangouts for online gaming, because unlike Roll20, in Google Hangouts, you can control everybody's volume and you can even mute people, which I've never actually had to mute some. Well, I've muted people before when, like, they're AFK and their sirens or a screaming baby in the background. I've never had to mute someone because they just wouldn't shut up. But you can if you need to. And it's really nice to be able to adjust people's volumes, because sometimes you'll have a player who's really soft and one that's really loud. And on Roll20, you just have to deal with that. You can't do anything about it. Now, if you have one or more, you know, of these more kind of disruptive people in your group, it's going to greatly limit the maximum number of players that you can handle without wanting to strangle all of them. Now, on the other side of the coin, you might have very introverted players in your group that you really have to work to draw them out of your shell. Now, if you have one or more of these types of players in your group, it's going to greatly limit the minimum size of your group, because you really need other players in the group to role play with the more introverted players and kind of draw them out of their shell, right? So, you know, if you've got a group of two players and both those players are super shy and introverted, it's probably not going to work very well for you. Now, some GMs, so this comes down to the GM personality too. Some GMs are just better at managing large or small groups than others. Each of these has its own challenges, whether you're talking about a really small group or a really large group. In a small group, the GM needs to really be ready with lots of evocative scenes and engaging NPCs to kind of keep things going. A GM that can roleplay NPCs really well does much better with a smaller group than a GM who can't. Smaller groups are great for things like intrigue and political games, and not all of us are good at running those. I don't think I am. In a large group, on the other hand, the GM needs to be really good at managing people, making sure everyone gets equal voice and equal time, keeping people on task, keeping the game going, things like that. You really need to be able to be assertive with a large group, and some people just aren't comfortable doing that. You need to be able to take control of the table, tell the players, hey, we're moving on, cut off a player who's hogging the game time, things like that. So the maximum and minimum group size is, I think, most determined by the GM and the players involved. I think a good GM with the right players can handle a much larger or smaller group than a not so good GM with players that are unhelpful and disruptive. With a large group, you really need players that will take responsibility for making sure they're not taking too much of the GM's time and not talking over people, not getting into rules discussions, stuff like that. So another important part of this that has nothing to do with the game that you're running is what I call the social aspect or your critical mass. So I've found personally that you just need a certain number of people in the game for it to be fun. And personally, I found this number to be three players, so three players plus one GM. And if you've got that or more, then the social dynamic is there and it's fun and you can play off each other and bounce off each other and it's a lot of fun. With only two or one player, you lose this social dynamic of the game. With only three people at a table, two players and a GM, it's just not enough, in my experience, to get that social dynamic that I want in an RPG that makes it fun to play. Any game I've been in where there's two players or less, it's just not as fun. So, all that said, is there a sweet spot, and what is it? So, I think there's definitely a hard minimum to your group size, which I would say is four, three players and a GM. It doesn't really matter what game you're playing. You want that many people. Any less than three players and it's going to change the dynamic of the game. Now, this can work. I'm not saying you can't make it work, but it takes a lot more effort on the GM's part, and I'd say it takes more effort on the player's part too to really make it work, and it's just usually not as much fun. As far as larger groups, to me, it really comes down to a thing of diminishing returns. There comes a point where adding another player to your group is going to lead to less enjoyment of the game for everyone involved instead of more. The trick here is figuring out where that point is for you, for your group, for your game, and then sticking to your guns and not going over that amount. And, you know, if you got to turn people away, you got to turn people away. In a more rules-light game, you might be able to handle one or two more players than you can in a more crunchy game. A lot really depends on the people involved. The more considerate your players are and the more skilled you are as GM with managing people, then the more people you can handle. And finally, I think that playing an online game limits the maximum group size, and I would say minimum group size, a bit more even than when in person. So for me personally, in my in-person games, my minimum is three players. I don't want to run a game for less than three players. And I think four players is the sweet spot. That's the perfect group size. And it doesn't really matter what game. Four is the perfect size. Now, I will add a fifth player if I have to. But at that point, you're getting into the territory of diminishing returns. You're definitely losing something by adding that fifth person. I think you're losing more than you're gaining. But sometimes I'll do it if I just have a fifth person that really wants to play. A lot of times what I'll do is, especially with an online game where maybe I don't know people, I'll start with five people just because I assume that someone's going to flake out at one point and I'll end up with four. And I've just found that usually that happens. Now, six is too many, and I don't want to have six players. Now, for online games, the minimum is still the same, three players minimum, with four being optimal. I might, in a rare, very rare instance, accept a fifth player, but I'm much more likely or much less likely to do that online than I will in person. because it's five is really too many and six is way too, I'm not taking six players. Your players are going to be bored for a large chunk of the session with six players. Now I have to say, saying all this, you know, it's kind of a do what I say, don't do what I do, because my Tyranny of Dragons campaign that I'm running right now, and we're having fun, I have six players. And the reason for that is I actually initially said I wanted five, because again, I was thinking, well, someone's going to flake out and I'll end up with four, which is what I really want. I wanted four people. And just due to the nature of the campaign, I did not want to try it with three. So I didn't want to have a situation where I started with four, I lose someone, and now I only have three. So I said, I want five players. I'm going to plan on someone not working out for whatever reason, and I'll be down to four. And then what happened was I had six really awesome people that wanted to play, and I couldn't decide, you know, which one to say no to. So I was like, well, I'll take six and someone will not work out and I'll have five and that'll be okay. And then what happened was like everybody worked out. We've been playing like 13, 14 weeks now. No one's flaked out, which is good, right? I'm not complaining, but it kind of, my trying to hedge myself kind of blew up in my face, because now I have a group of six people and it's too big. But that said, I lucked out. All of my players are good players. People do a pretty good job of making sure, you know, nobody gets left out. So it's working. I don't think I would want to try this if I didn't have six really good players that work well together. So I would call my situation the exception, definitely not the rule. But again, it's kind of illustrating personalities and things like that come into play. So if you have the right people, you know, you can make a bigger group work like what we're doing. So I guess actually now that I've said all this, the numbers are actually kind of the same for me online and in person. Minimum of three. Sweet spot is four players. And then the max I really want to deal with is five. It's just that in an in-person game, I'm more willing to go to five or maybe even six players than I am in an online game. So there you go. There's kind of where I fall on that. And a lot of this is from experience. And I've had a lot of experience playing and running games online and in person. I think the group size thing is definitely more crucial online than in person. I think there's more wiggle room in person, either with smaller or larger groups. But I think online, if you're going to go below three players or above four players, you really want to think about what you're doing and you really want to know the people involved. I would not recommend doing what I did and start a game with six people that are complete strangers to you and hoping it works out. Which actually, they weren't all strangers. One of them I knew from gaming before, but the other five, I had no clue other than what they told me in their messages they sent me. So let me know what you think. Shoot me an email, gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. Let me know, do you agree with kind of my opinions on what's the optimal group size? Or if you disagree, let me know what your numbers are and why. And also, maybe you know of a game where it's very different. Maybe you know of a game where you can have huge groups and it's awesome. Or maybe you know of a game that's really great with just one or two players. So let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. Well, that is going to wrap up episode 25 of Game Master's Journey. If you'd like to reach me, please email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can find me on Google Plus, just search for Lex Starwalker, and follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website, starwalkerstudios.com, where you can find the show notes for this and all my episodes, and you can also find my other podcasts there. You can also, in the show notes, find the link to our Google Plus community. I hope you'll join us there. If you enjoy Game Master's Journey and you'd like to help me out and help the show succeed even more brilliantly than it already has, please head on over to iTunes or Stitcher, whichever you use, and leave a review. And if you give me a 5-star review, I will thank you personally on the show. And finally, I just want to remind you again that you can get a free trial of Audible Books, courtesy of Game Master's Journey. Go try it out. Go check out The Eye of the World by Robert Jordan. And you can find that at audibletrial.com/gamemaster. So thank you very much again for downloading and listening to Game Master's Journey. I really appreciate your support. I really am enjoying doing this show, and I have a lot of great and fun things planned for the future. I've got some more interviews on the horizon, so I'm looking forward to that. Until next week, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.